podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Rival Recon here on Anfield Index Pro. I'm Harry Sethi. And with the sides above them faltering in recent weeks and the Reds on a run of six consecutive wins, Klopp's side will want to continue their unlikely push for a top four finish as they take on relegation battling Leicester City this Monday evening. Joining us on the pod to dive into how and why this season has unravelled for the Foxes, we welcome back Leicester City correspondent for the Leicester Mercury, Jordan Blackwell.
Welcome back, Jordan.
Thanks very much for having me.
No, it's always good to chat, and I think it's been a while actually since we last managed to catch up, and a lot has happened, unfortunately not.
Yes.
Tons of great stuff, so I think it's going to, hopefully there'll be some sort of catharsis in this, but I'm sure you're having plenty of these discussions of late over the past few months. And with three games left to go in the season, I suppose it does make sense at this stage to be asking you, I suppose, if you cast your mind back right to the beginning of the campaign, did you ever expect it to unfold the way in which it has done?
No, I don't think so. No, I think maybe the signs were there. So maybe perhaps I should have felt that way. But no, I think even with the sort of lack of transfer activity in the summer, which is probably the first real sign of potential trouble, I still didn't think that Leicester would be in trouble. I think you saw that, you know, this is a squad that in the previous three seasons had finished fifth twice and won the FA Cup and then obviously eighth last season. So you don't think, even if they don't get to sort of, improve the squad in any way, and obviously there wasn't much transfer activity, you still think, okay, with the squad they've got, they've still got a decent squad there. They're going to be okay. They're going to be okay. They might drop down a little bit because there's not the sort of extra motivation maybe, and there's not a freshness to the squad, but they might drop to like 12th or 13th. I don't think anybody really thought that they would be in this position. Not until they actually started playing the games anyway.
Yeah. And I remember when I was speaking with yourself and speaking with sort of other Leicester fans over the past, I'd say at least past year or so, there was a sense of frustration with things drifting a little bit under Rodgers, there being the sense that not maybe a completely clear sense of direction in terms of sort of where the squad was going, sort of what playing style he was truly trying to develop. As you say, I think when we look through the squad, tons of quality there, really, and it is a shock to see Leicester in the position that they're in, and also it's been a shock. I'm sure it comes as a shock to you, but it's been as a shock for a fan from the outside in, seeing from time to time sides go out there full of quality and put in the performances that they have done as well. So I mean, you mentioned the lack of transfer activity, and that was one of the first, not warning signs, but signs that perhaps it was going to be a bit of a bumpier season than expected. At the end of last season, I mean, where did you think were the areas where Leicester needed to strengthen? And I'm guessing the window that Leicester did have, did it go anywhere to actually sort of address those issues?
No, it didn't. No, I think that it was more that they just needed new players to just freshen things up. And to be fair, Rodgers did say that. It may have been, may have sort of made it out to sort of fans who don't know Leicester, but there was the moment when they lost to Forest in the FA Cup. This is when Forest was still in the Championship, and Leicester were obviously FA Cup holders. that Forest thrashed them 4-1, and Rodgers went on a bit of a rant after that and sort of said, you know, some of these players have reached their peak. We need to refresh the squad. It's all gone stale, kind of thing. And I think the feeling was that they wanted six new players, as far as I understood it. A centre back, two central midfielders, two wingers, and a goalkeeper, being a goalkeeper to replace Kasper Schmeichel, who, while I think it was given the impression that it kind of left of his own accord because he wanted the move to Nice. I do think it was a little bit of him being pushed towards the exit as well, as far as Leicester were concerned. So yeah, they wanted all those deals, and it looked like they were going to be active in the transfer market even as late as June. Rodgers was calling around potential targets, and you know, the transfer team and the sort of the scouts and the recruitment team were very busy. And then all of a sudden, I remember speaking to Rodgers in July. Leicester had a pre-season game at their sister club in Belgium, and I went over, and it was the first time anybody had spoken to Rodgers since the end of the previous season. And he was like, well, we can't do any deals until we sell players. So they didn't do any deals until they sold Fofana, and then brought in Fass as a replacement on deadline day. But that was it. And it did feel a little bit like the deals that they needed to do hadn't been done. But again, as I said before, but they didn't lose too many of the players. Yes, they lost Schmeichel, but there'd been doubts over him previously as well. And they lost Fofana, but he'd not played much of the previous season because he'd been injured for so long. Yeah. So it didn't feel, although it felt disappointing, it didn't feel devastating that they'd not done the deals. And so that it still, despite all that, it still has been a surprise what's come since.
And I suppose in terms of when you first felt that you started to seeing these warning signs in the performances, can you pick a particular game that you think back to, or patch of games in the season where you think that it's the concern started to get a little bit broader, that okay, this is more than just a sort of a bad run of form or patch of form, this is something a bit more significant?
Yes, I think I would say the away game at Brighton in early September, which was the sixth game of the season, I think.
September, wow, okay.
Yeah, so I remember writing, well, obviously Leicester had this terrible start. So at that point, that was their sixth game, and they drew the first one, then they lost the next six. Mm. But this was the fifth of those six defeats. They lost to Spurs. They lost 6-2 at Spurs the week after, but actually that wasn't as bad as the Brighton game. But I remember writing after the Brighton game that all of the hallmarks were there of a relegation battling side. I did say it was a bit too early to sort of definitively say that because they weren't even a sixth of the way through the season.
Mm.
But there was a lack of organisation. There were players not running, there were players arguing with each other, there were individual mistakes, all of the things that you would usually see in a team that not only is in a relegation battle, but loses a relegation battle, they were on display in that game. And I think that was a real big warning sign. But then again, that I know it sounds silly to say when they lost 6-2 the following week. So it was 5-2 the Brighton game, 6-2 the following week against Spurs. They actually played a lot better in that Spurs game. And it was 3-2 for, well, Leicester were level at half time. It was 3-2 up until about 70 minutes. And then Son came on and scored a hat trick with three shots, which kind of distorted how even a game it had been. But obviously they got back after the international break, and then they went on that really good run where they thrashed Forest, they thrashed Wolves. They beat Leeds, they won away at Everton, they won away at West Ham, all before the World Cup. And it actually felt like then, okay, maybe the sort of hangover from a difficult summer affected them to start at the start of the season. Maybe they were back on the straight and narrow.
Are you that person who has everything? The coolest merch and those must-have fan threads? Well, over at our Anfield Index shop, we've gone that extra mile when it comes to pimping up your Liverpool collection. From our popular range of bespoke design t-shirts, sweaters, hoodies and hats, to our signature edition mugs, prints and coasters, all provided with fast worldwide shipping. We have something for every red. We also stock official LFC merchandise and are licensed with the Premier League and UEFA to sell official iron-on shirt badges and sleeve patches. As a listener to this podcast, you can get 10% off everything with coupon code AIPRO10. Just head over to anfieldindex.shop or find us on Etsy by searching for Anfield Index.
But whether the World Cup's then affected them and they've gone backwards again, or whether that run of games just hid some of the issues that were still there, it's not quite clear. But certainly there were worries from as early as September because of the nature of the performances as well as the results.
Yeah, and you mentioning all those sort of hallmarks of a side that's going to be involved in a relegation battle that were sort of alarming to see that early in the season. I mean, what do you put that down to? Because, I mean, obviously then, as you're saying, so Leicester did go on that positive run before the World Cup. There's a lot of quality in that side. Yes, of course, the disappointment of not getting players in the summer when you were hoping for investment, things can go a little bit stale. Like that's sort of perfectly understandable. You can imagine that. But some of the things you're talking about there, like around sort of, you know, the lack of running, like a little bit of disharmony on the pitch, there's sort of players arguing with one another. I hadn't really seen too many signs of that prior to this season amongst the squad. Yes, at times I'll admit sort of my opinion was that I thought Leicester were underperforming a little bit for the quality that they had, but certainly didn't see those signs that there was sort of disillusionment amongst the squad. I mean, what do you put that down to? I mean, are you saying there that summer impact of actually ending up with, you know, practically very few players coming in and selling one of your sort of biggest young talents had that much of an impact? Or would you think it was maybe something along the lines of, you know, Rodgers being there for 4 years and the message starting not to get through to the players?
Yeah, I think that last point in particular, I think that with the summer, I think as well, I think there were more players that probably wanted to leave or saw their futures away from Leicester, maybe thought they'd done as much as they could with Leicester.
Right, okay.
You know, I think they played in Europe for the previous two seasons, obviously got close to the Champions League, but had played in Europe, played in the Europa League, and then obviously got to the semi-final of the Conference League as well. Obviously, coming into this season, they knew there would be no European football, and maybe because they'd had back-to-back years in Europe, maybe there were lots of players there that felt, okay, well, I want to go and play for a club in Europe now. A club that's competing in Europe, either in the Champions League or Europa League. So maybe the motivation for the players wasn't quite there. As you say, I think the fact that Rodgers had been there a while, I think he appreciated. I mean, that's why I think he wanted so many changes to the squad, because he had. This was new territory for him. It's interesting because I think it goes back to his time at Liverpool. So he did three full seasons at Liverpool, and I think he was sacked 2 months into the fourth. He'd been at Leicester slightly longer because he did the final 10 games of a season when he first arrived, and then he did three full seasons. And I think he was probably thinking back to his Liverpool time, thinking, well, maybe there's a kind of cycle, and we've had a 3-year cycle here, and the only way I'm going to, my message as a manager is still going to get through, is if we have a real kind of rotation of the squad. And I think that's what he wanted. And I think that's what he felt was needed, because he was probably thinking about his previous time at Liverpool. This was the longest he'd ever been at a club. Mm-hmm. And I think he was trying to find ways to reinvent himself and reinvent the team. I think then when he didn't get the players that he wanted and there wasn't the transfer activity, I think his enthusiasm may have waned a little bit. You know, I remember after that Brighton game, he was asked a question saying, are you still happy to be here? And I think he answered it perfectly fine, but I think the fact that that was even being asked,
yeah,
maybe showed in his body language, maybe he didn't look as motivated or as enthusiastic as he had been previously. So I think that combination combined with players maybe thinking they were above Leicester, I think that's not helped. And then you've got to this point when they're in a relegation battle and all of a sudden, I think they're struggling there because they're, well, I mean, there's numerous reasons really, but one, maybe they think they're too good. You know, they've bought into this message that we've seen from a few pundits that they're too good to go down. They've got the quality there, and maybe that might explain why they concede first in nearly every game. They've conceded first in 17 of the last 18 games. You know, it was almost as if they think they can coast through, and they don't realise until they've conceded, oh, hang on, we actually need to play here to get a result. Lack of confidence probably hurt them as well. There's maybe the fact that they weren't expected to be in a relegation battle. I think that's probably hurt the whole club in the sense that initially with Rodgers, they had a manager that wasn't anticipating being in a relegation battle. They had a set of players that weren't anticipating being in a relegation battle and a set of fans that weren't anticipating being in a relegation battle. Now, if you look at Forest, their manager, their players and their fans knew they would be in the battle at the bottom. And they've been really pumped up for it. And that's why they've got such good results at home this season. And everyone's kind of on the same page. At no point this season has it felt like the manager, the players and the fans been on the same page at Leicester. Nobody's really wanted to be in this situation. And that's why you've started to see people question whether they have to fight for a relegation battle.
Yeah, that acceptance is almost the key part of beginning to adapt to a relegation battle, isn't it? That actually thinking that it is a reality, then you have to sort of fight to earn your way into games before that quality can actually tell. And yeah, I think it's interesting to compare yourselves to Forest there. And what you're saying that, of course, they brought in like a small island of players, it seemed like, at one time in terms of the number of incomings, but I think none of them were under any illusion that it wasn't going to be a battle, which it's obviously turned out to be that way. And in terms of the players who have tried to stand up this season and drag Leicester along, I mean, from the outside in, again, James Maddison is a sort of name that like pops up in bright lights, because I think it's from the highlights that I've seen, from the comments I've seen, obviously you were talking there about sort of people coming out and questioning the fight, the hunger of the side. And I think obviously Maddison with some quotes like that attributed to him as well. He does seem to have actually become a really, really important figure this season. I'll be honest, in terms of my own estimation of James Maddison was that I didn't see enough from him game in, game out, again, outside from the outside in. Whereas this season, the more I've seen of Leicester, the more focal he has seemed to everything in terms of actually trying to have a positive influence on the side. But I'm sure I've missed players there who have been involved, or tell me if I'm wrong, and there haven't been many. But for you, who have been the players who have tried to rescue the situation?
Yeah, it is Maddison. There's no getting away from that. He has been, in terms of technical ability, he's been superb. I think he's got, 10 goals and 9 assists in the Premier League now? So, yeah. You know, one more assist and he'll be in double figures for both, which I think only Saka is the only player so far who's in double figures for both. You know, so to do that...
Is that his best season as well? I think it's his best season in the league, I think.
Yeah, so. I think it's his best season. I think... No, he got a combined 20 last season. I think it was 13 goals, 7 assists, and then he got 30 all competitions last season.
Just missing all of this, yeah.
Leicester obviously went quite far, a lot of games in Europe and in the Cups. Mm-hmm. So, yes, but even still, you know, he has been the focal point. His all round play has been very, very good. There have been games where he has.
Hello, I'm here to annoy you. I'm here to annoy you into listening to more of me and more of others on EPL Index. We don't just have the Anfield Index stuff. We've got EPL Index as well, which covers the entirety of the Premier League. And we have 3 podcasts and a whole bunch of really good writing on EPLindex.com. The podcasts are my own two-footed podcast, which is every day at 4 p.m., Monday through Friday, covering the whole league. We have A Tad Predictable, hosted by Tadiwa. You know Tadiwa, he does Anfield Index. He presents A Tad Predictable before every Premier League match week, and then Kevin De Vries and his crew on the EPL roundtable there every week after the Premier League match week. So make sure you listen to everything we're doing on EPL Index and follow us there on Twitter at EPL Index. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You know, there's been sort of an overwhelming desire to win, and that determination has been, you know, flowing out of him. There was a game against Nottingham Forest when Leicester hadn't won, and they came back after the international break, beat Forest at home 4-0. I've never seen a player produce a performance where they look so determined to win as Maddison was in that game. And then he, away at Everton, just before 2 weeks before the World Cup, was one of the best individual performances I've ever seen from an attacking player at Leicester. He didn't score. He set up the two goals. But just every time he got the ball, you could see the confidence in him. The footwork was amazing. The way he was deceiving players with drops of the shoulder and things like that. The way he was, you know, moving the ball and playing the ball and finding the pockets and setting up teammates. Yeah, just terrific. And I think there's got to a point where Leicester have been really reliant on him to produce that magic. Because the defence has been so poor, and because they concede, they've needed players like Maddison to produce the magic regularly in forward areas. And I do wonder whether, because they've been, the team have kind of expected him to produce that and needed him to produce that, whether it's now got to a point where he's trying a little bit too hard. I think particularly over the past few weeks, you know, he sees himself as one of the leaders in the squad. He was captain for a few weeks. Obviously, Evans has been injured the whole season. And then Tielemans missed 5 or 6 weeks with an ankle problem. So Maddison was captain in that period. And I think he took that quite seriously. And I think he feels that he's almost got to do it by himself at times. And we've seen him maybe sort of keep the ball a little bit too long, not playing teammates when he should have done. And I think that's what's annoyed fans a little bit. There was a particular comment after the Southampton game. Leicester lost to Southampton away it was early March, it was. And that's when people started worrying about relegation again. And he came out after the game and said, I think Rob Tanner, a colleague of mine who works at The Athletic, he published a story saying, sort of some of the reasons why Leicester, you know, are battling relegation. And Maddison sort of quote tweeted it and put, "This is rubbish. Did you watch the actual game? If we play like that, we'll be absolutely fine." And that quote is being brought up game after game after game, because they're clearly not fine. I could understand what Maddison was saying. If you watch that game, on the balance of chances, Leicester should have probably won. Iheanacho missed a few. Iheanacho's been quite good this season, but Iheanacho missed a few good chances in that game. Southampton didn't have that many. But even so, even, you know, on the balance of chances, there still felt something missing from Leicester's game. There felt like there was a lack of understanding, a lack of acknowledgement of how serious the situation was in. And then obviously Maddison's tweet afterwards then suggested that was the case too. And I think fans have kind of been taking that really seriously, that relegation could be a possibility. And I think they feel that players maybe haven't been doing so. That's been the problem with Maddison over the past couple of weeks, but really on the pitch, he still has been the best player. So nobody else has really performed to expectations. You know, Youri Tielemans is disappointed. Obviously, they've had goalkeeper issues and had to change their goalkeeper. Vardy has underperformed this season. Obviously, a slight sort of improvement since Dean Smith came in. Harvey Barnes has done okay. He's obviously has had his best goal scoring season this season, but it just feels like his finishing has come on, rather than because his threat has improved. There haven't been many players, if any, that have hit the expectations that they would, from the start of the season.
Mm. And obviously, I think a lot was made of the decision to sack Rodgers and how late that actually occurred in the season, given some of those worrying signs that you were talking about and how early the concerns were there. It's my understanding from that whole situation that perhaps that had something to do with compensation or something along those lines that was more technical in nature rather than sort of a belief that he could turn it around. Tell me if I'm completely wrong in that understanding, but like it did feel slightly strange to see him last in the job that long, considering some of the really bad results early in the season and then that poor stretch from around the start of the new year after the World Cup.
Yeah, I think that has been a discussion point. To be honest, I didn't really ever get the impression that that was the issue, because I think no matter what the compensation would be for Rodgers, it was always going to be less than the cost of relegation.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
So I think if they genuinely felt relegation was a problem or was going to be a problem, then they would have sacked Roger sooner than they did. I think they probably did analyze it in-house on occasion, and on every occasion they deemed that Rogers was the best manager for the job. I think obviously the run of games before the World Cup, changing the manager before the World Cup when you've got a couple of months break, that felt like the ideal time to do it. And obviously a couple of other clubs did that. Wolves got in Lopetegui. Southampton obviously got in Nathan Jones, which sort of turned out to be a bad move. But that was the time when clubs were looking to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But because Leicester had that kind of turnaround in form, I think they were up to 14th, I think, by the World Cup. It didn't feel like it was necessary to change manager then. They came back, didn't start very well, but then they got the signings in at the end of January. They won back-to-back games against Villa and Spurs, where they were excellent in both those games. And then it was like, okay, yes, we're back on track. And then they had another run of defeats. So it was kind of like that. Yes, he did get more time than I think most owners, most clubs would have afforded him. But because of the way the results came, it kind of felt just as he was on the brink of maybe being sacked, they would get a run of results that would save him for an extra few games. And it wasn't until the Crystal Palace game at the start of April that they felt they needed to make the decision. And to be fair, obviously they dropped back into the relegation zone with that result, but it was more than that. The performance was horrendous. They only lost in the last minute. Mateta scored in the last kick of the game. But I think it was, the shot count was 31-3. So Palace should have won the game far sooner than they did. I can understand why it feels late. And I think in hindsight, it was a late decision. It was just the run of games and the pattern of games probably did help him keep his job for that long.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. Just sort of the fractured nature of the season and that run just before the break. Yeah, probably was, especially with the manager's sort of tenure at the club and the positivity around him as well. It's like,
yeah,
I can understand that they were wanting to give him more time. I think what you were talking about earlier on, in that even if he is the best manager that Leicester felt that they could have got, maybe wasn't sort of the most appropriate for the situation that the club eventually found themselves in as well. But, and so that brings me on to the point of once that decision was made and then Dean Smith comes in, what did you make of that appointment given the task at hand, which is purely a battle to stay in the league at that point?
With all the managers that we're speaking to, it felt a little bit desperate, but I did think, I was pleased that Smith had the recent experience of keeping Villa up, that was only 3 years ago, and they had a real spurt towards the end of the season. I think they got 8 points from their last four games to survive that season. Obviously,
Grealish was inspired, wasn't he?
And I think that there was the famous game at Sheffield United where goal line technology stopped working. I think they won that one and would have drawn otherwise. But they did improve, and Smith managed to get a squad that had looked destined for relegation up into you know, up to safety. So I think in that regard, it felt like a decent appointment. Obviously, bringing Craig Shakespeare back to the club, the title-winning assistant manager, that felt like a positive move. Bringing John Terry with him as well, someone, you know, one of the Premier League's best ever defenders. Surely he was going to be able to help improve the Leicester's defence. So I think actually when the appointment was made, I think it was the kind of, with the three of them combined, with Smith, Terry and Shakespeare, I think there probably was a positive feeling, you know, a feeling that Leicester could get out of it. So yeah, I think it was obviously not ideal. The whole situation isn't ideal. And, you know, that nobody wanted to be in a situation where you have to trying to find a new manager in the middle of April to avoid relegation. Mm-hmm. But in those circumstances, it felt like Smith was a decent appointment.
In terms of how he's tried to approach that task and the changes that he's made, what have been the most noticeable ones? I mean, you were alluding there to a little bit of Vardy's slight revival under Smith as well.
Yes, that's been a big one. I think before Smith came in, Vardy had been on a 6-month goal drought in the Premier League. He'd only scored once in the legal season, which was a bit of a surprise because he'd scored 15 last season. But in 25 games. So Uzi had a really good strike rate because, you know, he was injured for a period. But so I think for him to drop off so suddenly did feel like a surprise. But it didn't feel like it was anything to do with Rodgers, really. It just felt like, you know, Vardy's race had run kind of thing. He was 36 and, you know, maybe that happens to all players. You know, if players didn't get old, you know, you'd still have, you know, some legends of the game still playing into their 50s. But, you know, when their legs go, it does affect them. So that didn't feel like a big deal at the time. But Smith's come in and said, no, his legs are still there. We're just not playing to his strengths. And he has kind of proven that. Vardy has been much more involved. And that's probably because they're playing the ball forward more quickly. Into areas, trying to play those passes before the opposition defence can get set into positions. You know, so there's, you know, playing the passes when there's more space, and that's obviously going to help Vardy. So that's been one improvement. I think that was the key. That was one of the key things that Smith said when he first came in, to move the ball forward more quickly. The other thing was to try to stop the opposition creating chances so readily. That's something he hasn't been able to change. The defence has been as well. Yeah, certainly over the last two games against Fulham and Everton, the defence has been as bad as it was at any point in the season. They're just torn apart at will. I think the issue for me watching it is that they push so many players forward to try to create chances for themselves, but they don't have the organisation to cope when teams then counter them. And that would be my big concern with Liverpool, because they are so ruthless when they do get the ball in sort of midfield areas, and they can get it forward quickly, and their attacking players, you know how to move the ball and get it into the box in one or two passes and get shots away. Leicester really haven't coped very well in those sorts of scenarios. Because they do make those mistakes further forward, which, you know, they're inevitable. If you're trying a riskier pass to try and unlock a defence, you are going to give up the ball on occasion. But it just felt whenever they did that, they would be leaving their defence really exposed. So it's not really been the defence itself that's been the problem. It's been how the team defends that's been the issue.
Those moments of transition you're talking about.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you say that, actually, because I think that's something that Liverpool have been very poor at all season as well, defending in those moments of transition, losing the ball in really bad areas, and not having the midfielders to really provide the cover that the defence needs. So you see all these 1v1 situations, and Alisson's had to do what he's done. But it's interesting thinking back to the previous Leicester game, actually, because I really did think Leicester deserved to win that game, to be honest. It was very strange that the way in which it ultimately transpired with the own goal, really own goals, and the way in which it, ended up, because Dewsbury Hall running through the midfield at will. I remember that, just a straight line run. No one tracking him was, where Liverpool found themselves at one particular stage. And obviously at the moment, they've been on this better run. And the one element of their game that sort of never really disappeared this season was knowing what to do in those moments of transition against other teams, as you're talking about, where you're sort of worried that Leicester are particularly vulnerable in those moments. I suppose, I mean, looking at the run-in and looking at all the different teams that are involved in this battle, and Liverpool, Newcastle, West Ham are the final three for Leicester. It looks like City, Wolves, Bournemouth are the final three for Everton. Forest got Chelsea, Arsenal, Palace, which is very tough as well. And it was at Southampton, equally not a great run. If you had to sum up where you think fans' mentality is at this stage, is there a degree of resignation after that Fulham loss, or is there a feeling that you are going to be able to get enough points to escape?
No, there is resignation there. I think the losing to Fulham and then watching Everton beat Brighton and Forest beat Southampton, the sort of combination of those three results all in a row, kind of, it felt like Leicester had blown their chance at that point. You know, coming off the back of the March international break, coming into April, if you looked at the fixtures on paper, over the final, I think, I can't remember if there was 10 or 11 games left at that point. On paper, Leicester had one of the best fixture lists, there was nine teams in the relegation battle at that point. Leicester had one of the best fixture lists, along with Palace and Bournemouth. Obviously, Palace and Bournemouth have both, you know, took advantage of theirs and got the results, and Leicester haven't been able to do that. And now they've come into these last three games where they've got a really tough run of fixtures, you know, against two teams that are in form and chasing the Champions League. And then before West Ham at home on the last day. I think in the few days since Monday, maybe a little bit more hope has emerged, particularly assessing Forest's running. I do think if Leicester are going to get out, it's going to be Forest that they overtake. I think Everton, although I think Everton will lose to Man City, those last two games against Wolves and Bournemouth, I think they probably only need to win one of those to be safe. And I think they will be able to do that. But Forest, they've been dreadful away from home this season, and they've got two away games left, and their one home game is against Arsenal, who will be in the battle. They'll still be fighting for the title at that point, even though they won't be favourites. So I do think there is a possibility that 4 points for Leicester would be enough, because they've got the better goal difference as well of the teams down there. But that means getting a point against either Liverpool or Newcastle and then beating West Ham on the last day. That would give themselves a decent chance. I'm not saying that would definitely be enough, but I think it would give themselves a decent chance. I think that doesn't feel that unachievable, you know, especially if West Ham get through to the Conference League final. You would think last game of the season, if you're playing for West Ham and you're playing in a Champions in a European final, that feels like a once in a lifetime kind of thing. I don't feel like you're going to be bothered about a game against Leicester where it doesn't really affect your future in the Premier League or anything like that. So I feel like that if Leicester need to win in that game, they will be able to, despite all their troubles. But it's just the hope that a win in that game will be enough. And maybe the results in the next two games don't affect them too much, because I really can't see them getting any more than a point out of the next two games. And I think even if they were to get that point, they would have to be lucky in some senses. So, it's a little bit bleak, but I don't think the hope has completely evaporated, but the well is running dry.
I don't need a VPN. I've got nothing to hide. This is what I used to tell myself before I hooked up with LibertyShield.com. Not only is my home internet now fully encrypted, but I can now access all the websites I want, whenever I want, and do so from absolutely anywhere. As a Liverpool fan, I love to know I can now watch every match, regardless of whether it's on UK TV or not. My Liberty Shield VPN makes sure nothing is blocked and guarantees me super fast streaming speed throughout that match. You can get connected right now with their software package, which includes a 48-hour no-obligation free trial and instant access to their apps for Apple, Android, Fire TV, PC, Mac, and Android TV. Or go a step further like I have and get one of their pre-configured VPN routers. These small but powerful devices allow you to easily connect every device in your home to VPN, making it the perfect solution for smart TVs, Mag boxes, and games consoles. Visit libertyshield.com today and use coupon code AIVPN25 to get 25% off at checkout.
Well, I was going to end it when you said you don't think the hope is completely evaporated, but the well is pretty dry. It feels like a bleak place to end it.
Yes, I wanted to be positive, but I thought actually I'm not really feeling all that positive.
Let's hope Jamie Vardy can thrive. And I mean, the man seemed to be fueled by pettiness at one stage. So let's hope he can thrive in these final three games and sort of a finger over the mouth to West Ham fans on the final day, final game of the season, which we know he very much thoroughly enjoys. So thanks so much for coming on, Jordan. Really appreciate the insight, because it's obviously been a difficult season to follow.
No worries at all. It's the one topic I can talk about. So, yeah.
No worries at all. And for all the Liverpool fans who've been listening to these episodes of Rival Recon throughout the season, not many more to go now, just the two more episodes after this, and we'll be back ahead of that game against Villa on the 20th of May, as this improbable push for top four continues. That we'll see sort of where Liverpool end up, but it's definitely been more fun in recent weeks to watch the side. So do join us then ahead of that game against Villa.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/Discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows.
Sports Social Podcast Network.